You're listening to the Packernet Podcast Network.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Packernet Podcast. I am your host and resident panelist, as always, Ryan Schlipp. Check us out online, Packernet.com. Find me on Twitter, Pack_Nadal. So the cool thing about today, I've been kind of prefacing this and I've been wanting to do it now, but probably won't until tomorrow. But that whole thing about Packers compared to the rest of the league, I did it apparently a year ago today. So that's pretty good timing. So you'll get a little bit of an intro about what's coming tomorrow. And again, I'm going to be spreading it out a little bit more. But also talking about the new staff. So again, this is from 365 days ago today. And again, otherwise, I will talk to y'all tomorrow. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing. But they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for five. That's right, a company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones. And to see what we find, learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, let us get started. Get started like a stable boy. So the first thing that I actually just missed, and I don't exactly know how, I was reading a bunch of articles. They never even listed it, so apparently I'm not the only one that missed it. But Kolk. I'm trying to say his last name right, and I can't even. I called him Kolk. Kolk Olivadotti. Pretty sure that's how you pronounce his last name. Kolk Olivadotti. Goodness gracious, it's Kirk Olivadotti. He is one of the older coaches on the team at 45 years old. It's not known yet if they will provide geriatric services to him. I would assume so. Motorized scooter, things of that nature. But he was hired as the linebackers coach. Quick overview of some of the stuff he's done. 1997, started at the Maine Maritime Academy as a wide receivers coach. Indiana State from 98 to 99, he was an assistant coach. Jumped over to the Washington Redskins as a defensive quality control coach, then defensive back coach for the Redskins, then defensive quality control coach, again, I guess a demotion, in 2004 for the Washington Redskins, then special teams assistant for the Redskins, 2004 to 2006, then linebackers coach, 2007 to 2009, before becoming defensive assistant for the Washington Redskins in 2010. So obviously, this is kind of how he got to know LaFleur, who spent time with Jay Gruden in Washington. He then went on to be the linebackers coach for Georgia, 2011 to 2013, then goes back to Washington as a linebackers coach. Seems as though he's really trying to climb the ladder, but just keeps kind of getting stuck. He's spinning his wheels a little bit. Because then he makes a lateral move to the Packers as a linebackers coach. So I kind of did a little bit of digging. I know a lot of this doesn't really have anything to do with production. You know, I'm sure he's a great husband and father, does charity work, and that was probably the end of the interview. But just for our sake, let's take a look at some of the groundwork he's laid. And by the way, linebackers coach was sort of the Winston Moss title. I mean, Winston Moss had other titles, but I'm assuming this is inside and outside linebackers. I would still kind of like an outside linebackers coach. And what I mean by that is, go out and find a pass rusher, a guy who played as a pass rusher. I don't care who it is. How about we just cut Clay Matthews now and see if he wants to come back as a coach? I don't care. Get somebody that understands pass, because those are two complete. I mean, calling it linebacker, would be like having a defensive line coach in a 4-3, and he's your, like, he does the 310-pound defensive tackles, but he also coaches your pass rusher. Like, pass rush is a specialty, man. That should be like, I don't know. Why do I even have to explain this? I feel like I shouldn't have to explain this to anybody. Very, very important position. And yet, and they have to do very different things. Like an inside linebacker, your primary skill set, you know, there's some overlap with like coverage, like dropping into a zone, slightly different angle getting into that zone. Linebackers who are off the ball compared to outside, but same deal. But otherwise, very different job. It's almost as if the linebacker name is just a name, and actually they're two entirely different positions. Which is why I don't even refer to 3-4 outside linebackers as linebackers. I call them edge rushers. Linebackers are off-ball guys. 4-3 middle linebackers, 4-3 outside linebackers, 3-4 inside linebackers. Those are linebackers. A 3-4 outside linebacker is an edge rusher. A 4-3 defensive end is an edge rusher. They're not defensive linemen, they're edge rushers. Defensive tackles are defensive tackles. 3-4 defensive ends, 3-4 nose tackles, 4-3 defensive tackles. And again, the reason I think that's so important is because calling a 3-4 outside linebacker a linebacker is nonsense. They're built like linebackers, kind of. But their primary goal is to go get the quarterback just about every single play. That's very different than a normal linebacker, than every other kind of linebacker. Because it's a different position. It's also potentially the second most important position. So again, why do we not have a coach dedicated to this? We had an inside linebackers coach. A guy whose job was dedicated, when we already had a linebackers coach, we have another coach whose job is to work with the inside linebackers. Blake Martinez has his own coach. Clay Matthews has Winston Moss, who has like six different titles, and is a little wonky in the mind, in the brain a little bit, you know? Just feel like we should maybe put a little more effort into it. Maybe we could have had a little bit of a better outcome. You know, very important position. We're paying a lot of money into the position. We're getting no production out of the position. Maybe because we don't have anybody coaching that position. I don't know. I'm just saying. Am I crazy? I don't know, because I can't stare out into an auditorium of all you people listening. Which is a good thing, because I would just cower into myself and start crying because I don't, you know, the whole public speaking thing. There's a lot of people that listen. But because the Packers aren't doing it, I'm kind of wondering if maybe I'm just crazy and I don't make any sense. Anyways, Kirk Olivadotti is our linebackers coach. And to be clear, with the Washington Redskins, he's listed as a linebackers coach. He was the inside linebackers coach. The Washington Redskins run a 3-4 system and also had an outside linebackers coach, which, you know, I don't know. Maybe that's something we could talk about or think about. I never thought about that before, but maybe we could look into that. I don't know. But I'm not exactly sure what the Packers are planning on doing. I really do hope that when they call him a linebackers coach, what we mean is inside linebackers coach. So anyways, looking at the Washington Redskins linebackers, there's definitely some production. The number one player on their defense was Zach Brown. Zach Brown is a linebacker. Not a small sample size either. This is 703 total snaps. And if you look at his career, what's especially impressive is that he spent his first 4 years with the Tennessee Titans. His best year was above average. He goes over to Buffalo, has another above average year, comes to Washington. His first year is not good. It's right at average. But then in his second year, you know, 1 year of development, let's give this guy a year. The guy goes from average to elite, by far his best year ever. Best run defense grade is very good. His tackling grade is very good. It was his best ever. His pass rush grade was above average, which was his, I don't know, third best-ish. And his coverage grade was actually very good. Second best of his career. So the totality of his career is above average, average. And then 2014, he didn't really play. Then good, good. And then when he goes to Washington, it's average, elite. So however you want to slice that, that's pretty impressive. Zach Brown is a second-round pick in 2012 by the Tennessee Titans, so obviously the talent is there, and he was able to unearth it, which is pretty awesome. The fifth best player on their defense was Zach Vigil, slightly smaller sample size here, actually quite a bit smaller, but there's no question that there's progression here. I mean, I don't know, maybe you can't even say that because the sample size is so small. But either way, it was average to above average to good was generally his progression. Really hard to say. But this is a guy who is a 2015 undrafted free agent by the Miami Dolphins. Since coming to Washington, he seems to be getting better, although he's hurt all the time, so whatever. Mason Foster, a third-round pick in 2011 by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He's not a good football player. He's had one good season that was with the Washington Redskins. Definitely, so he's spent 4 years with Tampa, 4 years with Washington. The 4 years with Washington are definitely better, but he's just not a good football player is all there is to it. So no, he didn't turn him into a stud, which is definitely unfortunate. Again, he had one good year in 2016 with the Redskins, but I think it's just one of those things where it doesn't really matter where he goes. He's not very good. But again, definitely a much better player when he went over to Washington than when he was with Tampa. Sean Dion Hamilton, sixth-round pick in 2018 this past year, played pretty sparingly. He actually started at the second half of the year. He actually did okay. His overall grade was not good, but primarily that's because in Week 17 against Philadelphia, he had just the worst game in the history of the world. If you erase that, which I can't, I don't know their formula for how they average this stuff out, but if you erase that, he had a really good season. I mean, he started in Week 12. He had a good game. Above average game, a very good borderline elite game against Jacksonville, and then another good game against Tennessee, and then again against Philadelphia, horrible. But even in that game, his tackling grade was above average, I mean almost very good, and then his pass rush was also considered very good. He actually had two total pressures on three pass rush attempts, including one sack. He had four tackles and one assist tackle on only 19 run defense snaps. So add in the sack, and it was a pretty productive day, but his run defense grade and his coverage grade were just horrific. So not bad for a sixth-round pick who is a rookie out of Alabama. And then finally, we've got Josh Harvey Clemens. Not a very good football player, but he has progressed from 2017 to 2018. He's gone from abysmal to bad, so there's that. But seventh-round pick in 2017. Prior to that, with his time in Georgia, not a whole lot to go off of here. There's a few names. Ramique Wilson, who's not a very good football player. Jarvis Jones, who's no longer even in the league. And Alec Ogletree, who's with the Giants, also not a very good football player. But these are the guys that he has some experience with back when he coached at Georgia. So if a guy like Alec Ogletree did become available, you know, it's something to keep an eye on, I suppose. But, you know, eh. But anyways, I'm not going to go back and analyze any further than that. Go back to, you know, even more people that he coached. He was a linebackers coach for the Redskins 2007 to 2009. It is what it is. Fact of the matter is they did bring him back. So you can look at it how you want. They do like him as a linebackers coach. Apparently they don't like him enough to give him a promotion. But, you know, LaFleur does have experience with him, seems to like him. There definitely has been some production. And there's growth, and that's really all that matters. Because we got a guy like Oren Burks, and you'd really like to be able to see him grow into something. And as much as it's disappointing with Oren Burks, as I've said, Blake Martinez had a terrible rookie year. Jake Ryan, terrible rookie year. Both of those guys got better every single year. I'm definitely not giving up. Now, we don't have the linebackers coach that those guys had anymore, so there's no guarantee. But again, that's why you need coaches that can make improvements. And as best as I can tell, Kirk Olivadotti has done that. By the way, we should get an outside linebackers coach one of these days. Just saying. The other news that did become official, Milt Hendrickson from the Baltimore Ravens was hired by the Green Bay Packers. He was given the title of Director of Football Operations, which is a pretty massive title. So you have to assume that this guy is, I mean, he's friends with Gutekunst, which is somewhat upsetting. The only reason I say it's upsetting is because it's easy to say he obviously is very well respected throughout the NFL, but maybe it's not so much that. It's just that Gutekunst likes him. I mean, to some degree, it's going to be, you know, a measure of he's worth it, but it's not just, you know, it's the whole relation thing. I know I can work with this guy. We're friends. We get along well. You know, we think alike, that kind of stuff. It's not just based on he is an absolute machine, but no, he is a high-ranking guy with the Ravens. Been a college scout for most of his career, or all of his career, possibly. I don't even know. But that is his background, college stuff. So, Director of Football Operations, he should be able to help out quite a bit. And again, the Packers do emphasize the draft more than anything. So I have very high expectations. I mean, the fact of the matter is, look, we don't have a whole lot of pro personnel guys. You know, the guys that can help us get free agents and those kinds of things. So if we're going to put all these resources into, scouting college stuff, that's fine. That should be a team's bread and butter. That should be what you're better at. If you draft and develop. Again, that is the most important thing. Draft good players and then get good coaches that can develop the guys that you draft, and you're going to have good football teams. And then you have that replacement rate, so that as guys get better and become more expensive, you can make intelligent decisions about whether you keep them or you let them go. And you get to a situation where you can let really expensive guys go because you've drafted talent behind them, depending on the position. I mean, if you have a stud edge rusher, we're paying them, and we have depth, I guess. I don't know. But you get into a situation like with Jake Ryan. At this point in time, I definitely want to keep Jake Ryan. It's not even a question. He's heads and tails better than Morrison. Jake Ryan is, to be completely honest, Jake Ryan, the last year he played, was better than Blake Martinez. Nobody wants to mention that because everybody's looking at stats and numbers, and Blake Martinez was a tackling machine, and that's awesome. But his overall grade, which, blah, 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 I know, whatever. His overall grade, including his ability to cover, you know, looking at things like shedding blocks, not just raw numbers like making tackles, Jake Ryan was a better linebacker than Blake Martinez, and nobody wants to admit that or talk about that. It's like, we need to let him go. But the fact of the matter is, had we been drafting guys and had Oren Burks been a little bit better and had we developed him a little bit more, we could have had an opportunity to say, you know what, we have Oren Burks, we have Blake Martinez, and then as depth we have a guy like Morrison and some other guys that don't cost any money. We can let Jake Ryan walk. We don't have to pay him a big boy contract. But now we kind of do have to, in my opinion. If we don't, which we might not, I think we should have paid Morgan Burnett for that exact same reason. Not necessarily because he's worth it, worth the money, worth the contract and all that, but because we just don't have anybody else, and that leaves us in a very dire situation. But we'll see. But anyways, I know he's not the one fully pulling the trigger, but I do want to look at a couple of their draft picks over the years. A little background on him, by the way. He is a Wisconsin guy, high school coach in Wisconsin, assistant coach UW Lacrosse, joined the Ravens in 2005 as a personnel assistant, promoted to Midwest Regional Scout in 2008, then was a National Scout in 2016. So this is a pretty big jump up for him. He took Elliot Wolf's job. So that's how big of a job that is. So Hendrickson is a Packers fan. He's a Wisconsin guy, so pretty happy about it. But since 2016, when he became a National Scout, I suppose we can go back further and find out some of the Midwest guys he got. Actually, that's kind of interesting. So anyways, a couple of those guys, let's just look at it. 2015, when he was a Midwest Regional Scout, Max Williams out of Minnesota in the second round. Carl Davis, defensive tackle in the third round out of Iowa. Not exactly sure what the territory is, but those two are definitely Midwest. 2013, Arthur Brown, Kansas State, probably Midwest. John Simon, fourth round, Ohio State. Ricky Wagner out of Wisconsin in the fifth round, a tackle. 2012, Kaleche Osemele, tackle out of Iowa State. So they definitely drafted a good amount of Midwest people. I mean, when you consider the amount of talent that comes out of places like Alabama, big-time programs, you don't usually think Iowa State, Indiana. There's two or three Midwest guys every year, which maybe is part of the reason he got a promotion. But, 2011, Tandon Doss, Indiana. Again, there's probably a lot more, but I'm not going to take a guess at which schools are Midwest and which ones aren't. Don't exactly know how big that range is. But anyways, since becoming the National Scout in 2016, here's a couple people that they picked up. So in the first round of 2016, they got Ronnie Stanley, a tackle at pick 6. He's been a very good left tackle for that team ever since. Their second and third round picks, both defensive ends, are no longer with the team, so that hurts. Kind of reminiscent of what we have with the Packers. Tavon Young, cornerback, is still there. Not super great. Chris Moore, wide receiver, is still there. Also not very good. Pretty mediocre guy. Alex Lewis, they drafted as a tackle, moved him into guard. He's pretty horrible. They did draft Kenneth Dixon. He had a pretty good rookie year. Ended up getting benched this year because of guys like Gus Edwards, Javorius Allen, Alex Collins. I mean, they get a lot of these kinds of guys that kind of show off for like a year. They're a real big name, and then you just don't hear about them anymore. Buck Allen was, I think it's just a lot of injuries, and then next guy up, and then they have a pretty good year. So again, with guys like Alex Collins, Buck Allen, They brought in Ty Montgomery, Gus Edwards. Kenneth Dixon just did not get a huge amount of playing time. But very good receiving back, actually. Very good might be strong, but he's pretty good. The best that they had on the team, let's say that. Matt Judon in the fifth round is actually a pretty decent defensive end pass rusher for the team. Not elite, but for a fifth-round guy to get that much production is pretty solid. Otherwise, the two sixth-round guys, not much there. 2017 first-round pick Marlon Humphrey. That guy was, man, oh, man, I really liked him. Pretty productive guy, so another good pick in the first round. Two good first-round picks. This was at pick 16, so definitely a very, very solid pick there. Tyus Bowser in the second round. Not a whole lot there. Definitely not good enough for a second-round pick. He's well behind Judon, Suggs, Za'Darius Smith. He really needs to step up in the third round for him to not be a pretty big bust, especially with Terrell Owens going out. I'm sorry, Terrell Suggs. That's a very different person. Drafted Chris Wormley, pretty solid guy, as a defensive lineman, a 3-4 defensive end, that is. Third-round pick, pretty solid. They drafted Tim Williams in the fourth round, I believe, who's actually pretty solid. He didn't get a whole lot of playing time or snaps, but he actually graded out as their number one pass rusher, so it's kind of weird they didn't give him much opportunity, probably because most of his talent is run defense as opposed to pass rusher, so situational guy. But again, pretty solid to get at least a situational guy to come in certain situations, you know, third and short, whatever, go ahead and put him out there on the edge. He's a productive player. Very, very good run defender. Mr. Nico Siragusa, somebody we all know, drafted him out of San Diego State in the fourth round. Jermaine Illuminor, he's playing offensive tackle. He was a guard in college. Obviously, that isn't panning out very well. Late round guys that play guard that you try to push out to tackle, I'm guessing the hit rate on that is like 1-ish percent, if that. Finally, Chuck Clark didn't make the team. That brings us to the 2018 draft. Now, this one's kind of interesting because in the first round with the 25th pick, they picked Hayden Hurst, a tight end. So right off the bat, this guy does not have any objection to drafting tight ends because they actually drafted two in this draft, which is crazy. Now, there were a bunch of guys, not super, super elite like early first round guys, but there were a bunch that were thought of as like late first, early second, and they ended up getting two of the big name guys, one of them in the third round, which is really impressive. But they got Hayden Hurst with the first pick. He's mediocre, I guess. I mean, definitely better than anybody we have, but not very good. I shouldn't say that. He's moderately better than anyone we have. Then they traded up to get Lamar Jackson. We'll see how that pans out. Obviously, that at this point seems like a horrible decision. But, you know, we'll see. Then they did not have a second-round pick because they traded up to get Lamar Jackson. But in the third round, they got Orlando Brown and Mark Andrews. Both of those guys are pretty decent. Orlando Brown, his draft stock completely tumbled. He was considered like a mid-first, and then he did like four push-ups. Like literally, it was like he benched, I don't know, 12 times, which is just incredible for a guy his size. He's getting beat by like, you know, 185-pound defensive backs putting up like 13 reps or something. But anyways, he's been pretty decent at right tackle. Mark Andrews is actually their top tight end. He was, a lot of people thought, easily the best. He's a first-round draft pick, whatever. For whatever reason, he fell to the third round. They decided to draft him. I'm guessing it was just a value thing. They're thinking, I don't want to draft him, but, I mean, he's easily the best guy on the board. So they did, out of Oklahoma, same place as Orlando Brown. Mark Andrews was the 11th best tight end in the NFL, very good receiving back. So they, you know, in the first three rounds, they got Hayden Hurst, Orlando Brown, and Mark Andrews. All three seem to be pretty good guys. Lamar Jackson, we will see. They also got Anthony Averett in the fourth round. Did not get a lot of playing time, only 73 snaps. But as far as his grade in those 73 snaps, he was the second best cornerback behind Marlon Humphrey, who was who they drafted the year prior. They drafted Kenny Young in the fifth round. Mediocre. Sorry, that's also fourth round. Fourth round, Jaleel Scott, wide receiver. Never really saw the field. Actually, he was on IR, that's why. So, can't really give him a proper analysis. Jordan Lasley, wide receiver, never really saw the field. Deshaun Elliott was a pretty big-name safety. They got him in the sixth round. He also was on IR, so we don't really know what happened there. Sanat, the next guy they got, also on IR. Never got to see what happened there. He's a tackle. Bradley Bozeman, he was a center in college. They brought him in as a guard. Not super great. Very limited as far as snaps, but he was actually better than Alex Lewis, so not bad, especially considering how late they ended up drafting him, which was the sixth round. And then finally, in the seventh round, Zach Sealer, defensive end. He graded out his average, which for a seventh-round defensive end, which, you know, 3-4 defensive end, defensive lineman, basically. This was a pretty solid draft class. The only potential big miss is going to be Lamar Jackson if he doesn't turn the ship around. But to get talented guys out of, you know, your third round picks, Orlando and Mark Andrews, fourth round pick Anthony Averett, there's talent all through this draft. Now, the one thing that I think is extremely interesting out of this whole thing, aside from, you know, being relatively decent drafts, is the fact that they took two tight ends, Mark Andrews and Hayden Hurst. Now, they have another tight end who's a very good tight end by the name of Max Williams, and he's due for a contract. Now, he's worth a contract, but why in the world are you going to extend Max Williams to a contract when you drafted two guys that both seem to be pretty solid? And by the way, they actually have a third guy that's also pretty decent at tight end by the name of Nick Boyle. So you've already got three that are decent, and Mark Andrews seems like he could potentially be somewhat of a stud. Why are you extending Max Williams? You probably won't. Now, why is that interesting? Well, I don't know. We need a tight end. And yeah, he's a free agent, but guess how old he is? He's 24. Now, it doesn't make any sense. Why would Baltimore get rid of a pretty good, pretty talented 24-year-old? Because, again, don't pay him when you've already got Mark Andrews, who's young. Hayden Hurst is probably like 25, 26, because they drafted him. He was very old. Nick Boyle, I believe, is pretty young. Going into his fifth year, so I mean, he's not like 32 or anything. So you got three moderately aged to young, Mark Andrews, very young tight ends. You just don't do it. Now, if Max Williams becomes available, again, not only does our director of what is his title? Football operations. So he will be in charge of pro personnel as well as the college scouting and all that stuff. Meaning, not only was he the one scouting, because remember, he was a Midwest regional scout. Where did Max Williams come out of in the second round? Minnesota. He's the one that directly scouted Max Williams, and he's the reason that Baltimore pulled the trigger on him. So there's not really anybody in the country that knows about Max Williams the way Milt Hendrickson does. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, if you told me to pick a team, if Max Williams is going to be a free agent, where's he going to go? I would say the Green Bay Packers. It just makes too much sense. Very young, unbelievably athletic. He was easily the best in that class, thought to be a hands-down first-round pick. Ends up going in the second, and again, it was Milt Hendrickson, the Midwest regional scout, who scouted him, who gave his full report to the team. They really liked him. They took him in the second round. I really like it, man. I think it's what the Packers need. We not only need a good tight end, we need some youth. This is the kind of thing where you can bring in Max Williams, you can get rid of pretty much everybody, with the exception of, I don't know, I'd kind of like to try my hand at Mercedes Lewis maybe one more time, now that we got Nathaniel Hackett, if we can get him back as a blocking guy. Then again, Max Williams, his primary skill set is blocking. He's an okay receiver. He's still the second best receiver on the team. He's not quite where Mark Andrews is. But I'm just saying, man, I think that would be pretty solid. We got a new tight ends coach. We got Aaron Rodgers is going to be his quarterback, which is a pretty big difference. We got a team run by LaFleur who's really interested in getting the run game going, utilizing guys like Max Williams in that role of blocking, H-back, whatever. I don't know. I like it. I'm going to pencil it down right now. Max Williams to the Green Bay Packers. And if they extend him, then good. They deserve him. You can have Mark Andrews, Max Williams, Nick Boyle, and Hayden Hurst. Go for it. Knock yourself out. Actually, Nick Boyle's up for a contract, too. But he's 25, and he's just about as good. So fine. Go ahead and keep Max Williams. We'll get Nick Boyle. So burn. Anyways, that's the end of that nonsense. All right, so the final thing is this little thing that I've done. Essentially what it is, and I've told you that I was going to do this, and I did it. Only for offense so far. We'll get defense hopefully today, tomorrow, whatever. But I've taken every starting position. So that is quarterback, and I've put their name next to each position. So quarterback, Rodgers, wide receiver 1, Adams, wide receiver 2, Equanimeous. This is based on their Pro Football Focus grade, by the way. So Equanimeous was our second best wide receiver 3, MVS, our fullback, Vitaly, which I probably wouldn't have used Vitaly because of he only had like 20 snaps or something, but because I want to be able to visualize it for the Packers, and I don't really care about other teams, I wanted to put him in there. I did RB 1 and 2, which is Jones and Williams. Tight ends 1 and 2, which is Kendricks and Graham. And then offensive line, Bakhtiari, Taylor, Lindsley, McCray, and Bulaga. Again, I'm just looking at offensive starters. I'm not looking at depth. And then what I did, so that's on the top, going across. That's columns B, C, D, blah, blah, blah. If you look at each row, you have a list of 32 teams. So for each team, for example, right at the top, for whatever reason, it's sorted, you have the New England Patriots. So you can look at a cross-section and you can say New England Patriots wide receiver 3 was ranked 29th in the NFL. And what I'm doing is I'm comparing, this isn't just a rank, because if you go to Pro Football Focus and look at their ranks, you look at wide receiver ranks. So you can see so-and-so, you know, Equanimeous is maybe the 113th best wide receiver, or whatever, I just made that up. But how does he compare to every other wide receiver too? How does Marquez compare to every other wide receiver 3? This is also going to be a really good resource for the draft, because if you're doing a mock draft, you look at the Detroit Lions, for example, who do I want to pick? Which position are they hurting the most compared to the rest of the league? Well, they have the 25th best tight end 2, the 25th best right guard compared to other right guards, so those are areas to look at. Because again, it's not just how good is this player, but I mean, if you've got, you know, you could look at it and say, oh, your center is graded relatively low. Well, most centers are graded low. It's actually the 14th best, so it's not that bad. You know, their wide receiver 3 is graded relatively low. Yeah, but he's the 6th best wide receiver 3. You see what I'm saying? Now, there's a little bit more, so I want to keep going. If you go past, you know, I've got the quarterback, all this different stuff, the next column says average. And essentially what this is looking at the average. Now, if you look at Pro Football Focus, they'll give you your overall grade on offense. But I believe what they do is they weight based on, you know, it's not just an average. I promise you that. What I did is I said, let's forget the importance of each position. You know, quarterback is more important than fullback, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I just want to know your grade or your rank, and then I want to average that out so I can see just talent-wise, how talented are your starters? So for example, the Chicago Bears here, their offense is the 13th most talented offense as far as their starters. So again, I'm just looking at starters, and I'm not worried about, you know, which position is more important than the other. I'm just looking at overall talent. So this is all on the sheet, and by the way, this is on Patreon. I uploaded it on Patreon for those of you that are giving $5 or more. I know I've got about 13 of you giving under $5 if you want to bump that up to $5. Otherwise, anybody interested in this sheet for mock drafts or just for a reference for the Green Bay Packers, because this is Packers-centric, I've got the Packers highlighted. There's also another thing below I'm going to talk about in a minute that's just for the Green Bay Packers. But anyways, that's where you can find that if you're at all interested in that. It's on Patreon. $5 a month. You get this sheet as well as pretty much everything. I've got a bunch of other sheets that I've uploaded as files and resources that you can use, and I'm going to be doing that throughout the year every time I do one of these little projects. And again, if you want me to do a project, let me know. You know, call in or text in a question. I'll analyze it and see what I can do. But again, $5 a month and you get all this stuff. After average, I went and did a few more things. The next column is wide receiver trio. So I want to know, we've got wide receiver 1, 2, and 3. Who has the best trio? So, for example, let's pick a random one here, and we'll say the Carolina Panthers have the 17th best wide receiver trio. Then after that, I have running back duo. Let's say the Chargers have the number 2 best running back duo. I've got tight end duo. You can look at the Steelers are number 11. Then I've got tackles. In other words, you know, your left and right tackle combined together, how good are they? Not surprisingly, the Packers are solid, but they're not number 1. They are 3rd. The Rams are number 1. If you look at guards, you got the Patriots have the number 1 in guards. And then I have the final column here is offensive line, which is all 5 guys. It looks like that's what it's sorted by, so that's why the teams are all messed up. But if you know how to use Excel or Google Sheets or whatever, however you want to open this, you know how to sort columns and all that stuff. Just be kind of careful. Make sure you're doing it correctly. Otherwise, you're going to kind of mess some stuff up. Not for me. I don't care, but you'll mess it up for yourself. But at the very bottom, what I've done, and this is just for the Green Bay Packers, what I've done is tried to quantify how much better or worse each one of these players, so Aaron Rodgers, Adams, Vitaly, et cetera, how much better or worse they are than the league average. So I've taken an average, and instead of giving you exact Pro Football Focus grades, because I'm trying to mask that as best as I can, I set the average to 10. So the league average minus the Green Bay Packers, the other 31 teams average out, the average, they've given an average grade of 10, just an arbitrary number I gave. But then I've looked at the overall quality of the players based on that. So, for example, not surprisingly, the one player who is the highest compared to the league is David Bakhtiari. He was given a grade of 12.21. So, again, 10 is the average. 12.21 is David Bakhtiari. So they're all relatively close to 10, But, you know, that's just sort of the deviation. Again, I just want to show you not just where he ranks. So, yes, he is number one, but to what degree is he better than the rest of the league? So, anyways, I'm just going to run through the raw numbers for the Green Bay Packers. I'm going to go through the quantification grades, and then, you know, yeah, I'm kind of giving away the cow here. But, again, if you want to write it down, fine. But I'm also going to be changing this and updating this because, again, this is, as I mentioned before anyways, this is looking back at 2018. This isn't looking into the future. So I'm going to be doing this again as as you start to become more familiarized or as we start to learn how the 2019 rosters are going to shape up. So then we can look at it, give these guys proper grades, know who the left has, because it's tough right now. It's tough. You can't decide that. I don't know how many of these guys that are free agents are coming back, et cetera, et cetera. So I decided not to even try. I just want to look at 2018. So anyways, here we go. Quarterback Aaron Rodgers was ranked fifth. Devontae Adams was the seventh best wide receiver one. Equanimeous St. Brown was the 27th best wide receiver two. Marquez Valdes-Scantling was the 23rd best wide receiver three. So as you can see, wide receiver two and three also not very good at all. That's definitely an area where we need to improve. Danny Vitale was the 20th best fullback. Now, when you factor in how many teams don't have fullbacks, he was pretty close to dead last. Now, again, small sample size. Are we even going to use him? I don't know. I don't care. But bottom line is, if we're going to use a fullback, presumably we should probably try to get somebody better than Vitale. Aaron Jones was graded as the 10th best RB1. I know a lot of people aren't going to be happy with that, but it just is what it is. Jamal Williams, the 14th best RB2. Tight ends, real nightmare. Lance Kendricks, the 29th best tight end one. We just did not have good tight ends. Jimmy Graham as tight end two was 18th. So obviously most teams do not have two tight ends. So having a guy like Jimmy Graham who's as talented as Lance Kendricks. But I mean, that's look at that from reverse. Basically, Kendricks and Graham and Lewis, for that matter, are kind of below average tight end twos. Is kind of another way to look at that, right? If 16 would be about the average, 18 is slightly below average. So Kendricks would be like a mediocre tight end two. That really stinks, man. David Bakhtiari, number one left tackle. Lane Taylor was the 10th best left guard. Corey Linsley, the 6th best center. Justin McCray, the 10th best right guard, which is encouraging to see. At least top third. And then Bulaga was the 7th best right tackle. Overall, as an average, they have the 10th best offense, the 10th highest graded offense. So to go back to some of the other questions I've got about how far away are we, you know, compared to some other people, yeah, we're lacking in some areas. But the areas we're lacking, wide receiver two, wide receiver three, not super premium positions, something we definitely need, but not the end of the world. Otherwise, tight end, but that's about it. Every single offensive lineman we have is top 10. Our running back, RB1, is top 10. What up? It's 5 o'clock already. Oh, man, I got to get going. Our wide receiver 1 is top 10. Our quarterback is top 10. I mean, those are all the primary positions. So we need. So what do we need? We need better tight ends and our wide receivers to either improve or to get some new ones. Otherwise, pretty much everybody's like top 10. I mean, if we just got a tight end one that was top 10, literally every number one position is top 10. Quarterback, wide receiver, fullback doesn't count, I don't care. Running back, tight end, tackle, guard, center, guard, tackle. Every single one of them would be top 10. That's pretty encouraging. And again, not a talent issue with the Packers. There's some talent issues, but that's not an excuse. 10th best offense did not play like the 10th best offense. Anyways, moving on. The 16th best wide receiver trio, which obviously that's pretty much just averaging out Devontae Adams being solid with the other guys not being super great. The 10th best wide receiver or running back duo, the 26th best tight end duo, which the only thing surprising about that is that there are six teams with worse tight ends. Third best tackle duo, as I said, the 10th best guard duo, and the 3rd best offensive line in the NFL, which is just pretty awesome. It's also awesome because I still wouldn't mind, you know, taking a swing at a guard or something later in the draft and, you know, improving the guards just moderately would easily bump us into the number one spot. Anyways, finally, let's just run through these real quick and then be done. Again, this is the quantifying how much better or worse each position is. And this is from 10. So you just got to kind of get acclimated. They're all going to be pretty close to 10. I got to zoom out a little bit here because I can't read the top and the bottom. Or just freeze the top pane would work, I guess. There we go. And again, the average is 10, just try to visualize this. So Aaron Rodgers, 11.79. Devontae Adams, 11.04. So these are better than average. Wide receiver 2, 9.06. Wide receiver 3, 9.57. Fullback, 9.03. All three below average. Aaron Jones, 10.5. Jamal Williams, 10.16. Lance Kendricks, 8.5. Just real bad. Jimmy Graham, 9.72. David Bakhtiari, 12.21. Lane Taylor, 10.77. Corey Linsley, 11.48. Justin McCray, 10.42. Brian Bulaga, 11.33. Our average, 10.4. So a little bit better than average, I suppose. Our wide receiver duo, 9.95. Running back duo, 10.35. Tight end duo, 9.06. Tackle duo, 11.78. Guard duo, 10.59. Offensive line, 11.27. So if we were to look at the biggest discrepancies in talent and say that these are our biggest needs in the draft, for example, tight end is by far the biggest. After that would be fullback, then wide receiver 2, then wide receiver 3, then tight end 2. I believe those are the only below average. So assuming we don't really care about fullback, it's basically we need a tight end as our biggest priority. We need a wide receiver as our second biggest priority. However, our third biggest priority is also wide receiver. So maybe you just kind of package those and say it's the most important. But, you know, fourth biggest is tight end too. So tight end and wide receiver, that's pretty much it. Those are our biggest needs. Everything else is technically above average. That's including our guards, which, again, I'm not saying they're good. I'm not saying I'm satisfied. We could do better. We should do better. But just so you know, Justin McCray is technically above average. Again, he's not good, but he's better than most right guards. Lane Taylor, we could do better, but he's better than the average left guard in the NFL. So, anyways, that sheet is available if you want to play with it, if you want to see what some other teams have. Use it for mock drafts or just keep it for yourself as a general reference. It's yours. Check out patreon.com/pack_daddy. And again, it's $5 a month or more. The people that donate to that, you'll be able to unlock all the different things that I've been putting on there. But anyways, that's about it. You folks have a fantastic day. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one. Bye-bye.